It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America,
Albania,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Courtesy of Steve in New York, we now have a new word. Lakotai. L-A-C-O-T-I. Lakotai. No, it has nothing to do with the profound respect that we have for a group of indigenous plains peoples. No. Lakotai means loud and... Took me a minute! Loud and clear on Tune In. Big L, little A, big C, little O, big T, big I. There's a creativity cowbell in that. Absolutely. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It's More and Monday and, into the bargain, live programming for the holiday weekend. On this, the third long holiday weekend. On this, the third day of July 2017. Okie doke. I am sounding a little funny in my headphones. Let me make sure nothing's gone sideways. No. Okay, I don't want that. I don't want that. Okay, and okay. So, we should be golden. Like I said, we are live. I'm live. You're live. We. Not me and that mouse in my pocket, but we together, this little family community congregation that we call The Horn. We're live for the day before Independence Day 2017. From a little note from the Art of Word Knowing, little restaurant down there, I guess they couldn't find an O or an F, and so their message board reads only, Happy 4th July. That's sort of semantically troublesome. That's a little, okay, you know, for somebody like me for whom language is kind of a, always has the potential, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, always has the potential for nails on a chalkboard. I got to counting, let's see, 1776, okay, so let's go with 77 because that would be the first 4th July, first 4th of July, happy 4th July, so we're counting months of July. So that's 97, that's 200, 203. So this would be, wait a minute. That's 23. Okay. Ciphering. That's 223. So this would be the 240th July. Not the 4th July. This would be the 240th July. If we don't count the 4th of July, 1776, in which case it's the 241st. definitely the 241st. I'm sorry. It happens. It's in my head. I apologize. Well, thank you, Steve in New York. I appreciate the technical expertise. He wanted to know. It just occurred to me, Bob, when the volume was so low, did you happen to check? Make sure everything's correct. Did you happen to check the dispensople or the flagellate? Actually, I did, and it was neither of those. There's a bug. There's a bug in the system, and sometimes the system forgets its sound card, and it has to be gently reminded. But it seemed to be remembering today, and I'm happy for that, and so I'm not going to push it. Although I admit I sound funny in my own headphones, but you know, two cannibals are eating a clown, and one looks at the other and says, "This tastes funny to you." Oh God, it's going to be one of those nights, isn't it? But so the program's live, as you can obviously tell. There's been a hunger today for live programming. I had a note earlier, just a little bit ago, about 2 hours and 20 minutes ago from Sylvia, who has been sending me tomato porn. And no, there's nothing nasty. No, it's just beautiful, beautiful photographs of the tomatoes she grows. And, tomatoes. When the sun's been beaten down on them, and they're just ripe and warm, and, yep, off the vine there, and presuming you haven't put any poison on them or anything, you just give them a quick dust off or maybe just a gentle rinse and eat it like an apple. Ha, 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 ha. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So yummy. But Sylvia noted, desperate for new content on a pre-holiday day, I momentarily tuned into Rush's station. I didn't recognize the substitute host, so listened just long enough to hear him welcome Louis Gohmert, then saying it was a real treat. Too late. I turned it off already. Turned my stomach. Yeah, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Sylvia, but it probably took out a small handful of brain cells. And you know, they don't regenerate, but, you know, the brain has a miraculous way of wiring around damage. So hopefully that's what'll happen. But please don't make that mistake again. No. No, just no. Just no. So, like I said, the program's live. And this is a listener-supported program. And I got some conversating to do on that topic. One, program note. Today, tomorrow, and Wednesday will be absolutely typical programs, 3 hours, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday and Friday, however, they will be those truncated two-hour programs from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. On Friday, we'll go right to the front porch, almost straight out of the gates, at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, as long as Sparky's okay with that. So we got that going on. And that's because I will be subbing for Malloy from 9 to 11 p.m. on Thursday and Friday. Okay, so we've got that part out of the way. Now the next part. I have received word. Well, no, let me back up. There's a backstory to this. So, you know that because you listen to this program, you're familiar with the work of Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. You probably know that the only bill ever to be introduced in the Congress of the United States that would end the long-term assault on human rights, human dignity, and human health in Appalachia that happens with mountaintop removal, namely the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, is the work of Coal River Mountain Watch and its Appalachian Communities Health Emergency ACE campaign. You know that. You're kidding, right, Marty? Yeah, the program's live. So knowing that, you are probably aware that it was the work of Coal River Mountain Watch that really began to change the dialogue about the impacts and effects of mountaintop removal from a matter of aesthetics and the ugliness of the practice to a matter of the existential nature of the assault on the ability of humans who live near it to not die of god-awful, loathsome diseases. It was Coal River Mountain Watch and the ACE campaign, led by Bo Webb and co-founded by myself. It was the ACE campaign that began talking in terms of the damage to human health. And that really did change the dialogue and the discussion. A couple of years ago, Bo Webb organized, and I participated in, something called the People's Foot Rally. We held it in the parking lot in front of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Protection. At that rally, we brought to bear pressure on the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and on the governor's office to acknowledge, finally, the more than two dozen peer-reviewed science journal articles that point to a connection between mountaintop removal blasting and the poisoning of God only knows how many innocent people who have to live near it. Immediately after the People's Foot, there was also an announcement by the National Academy of Science that they were going to do a full-scale review of all the peer-reviewed science articles to date, and that they were going to periodically update the public on the status of that review. None of that would have happened without Coal River Mountain Watch. Well, I received word, and now we're up to the present. I received word a few days ago that there will be a public forum. There will be a public presentation next week in D.C. regarding the findings thus far. Sierra Club will be there with their agenda. Appalachian Voices will be there with their agenda. Various other organizations will be there with their agenda. I'm sure the coal industry will be there with its agenda, its toxic, homicidal agenda. At present, however, the only people who will not be there, who should be there, are the people who actually got this ball rolling. Namely, Coal River Mountain Watch. The other two principal colleagues in the campaign, the other three principal colleagues in the campaign, for various reasons, including a death in the family, cannot make it. That leaves me. And frankly, Coal River Mountain Watch needs to be there, needs to be represented. So that means that next week, Monday, would be a travel day. And Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday would be days in D.C., with me returning home on Friday and barring a blowout and having to get a replacement rental car like I did last time, home in time to do Friday on the front porch. That means that this week would have to, be one of double fundraising simply so I could be able to go. And I hope this meets with your approval, because we're going to try to raise 2 weeks' worth of funds in 1 week this week so that I can leave here, you know, at, Jesus, you don't even want to know what hotels in D.C. cost right now. High summer, middle of the tourist season, I'll probably be staying 50 miles out of town. That's a pain in the ass. But if it is what it is, it's what it has to be. In the chat room, Anatole wants to know, will Blankenship be there? Thank you, by the way, for pitching in on the third of the month today, Anatole. I appreciate it. You mentioned that, and I saw it happen. Thank you so very much. I hope to hell he won't be, but he may be. But more importantly, the people who got this ball rolling need to be there to advance the interests of people who are actually affected by what's going on. See, nobody in the Sierra Club actually lives in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. Nobody in Appalachian Voices lives in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. The only organization engaged in the struggle of mountaintop removal that actually is headquartered smack dab in the middle of the sacrifice zone is Coal River Mountain Watch. I know some of you contribute on a monthly basis to Coal River Mountain Watch. Well, we don't have... we don't have big benefactors like Michael Bloomberg. All we have is, and by we, I mean they. Others bear far more of the burden than I. Is guts and determination and an unwillingness to fail and an unwillingness to falter in this effort. So what I'm asking is that we raise tonight through Friday enough money to cover 2 weeks. If we can't get to, I have to RSVP on Friday. If I don't know by Friday morning that we've raised enough funds for me to go, no one will be there for Coal River Mountain Watch. So it boils down to raising $400 a night now through Friday. Now, that brings up another topic. You know that the first program of the month, if it fell on the first day of the month or the second or the third, you know that the first day of the month for years now has started with Shirley's Challenge. I told you a month or so ago that the originator and funder of Shirley's Challenge had sadly passed away. Well, I had a note and a call a couple of weeks ago from our buddy Laborman in the chat room. And he said that he did not want Shirley's Challenge to go by the boards. That he wanted Shirley's Challenge to go forward. As a sort of living memorial to the person who originated it and kept it going for these years. And asked me to reach out and see if I could find others who, Laborman said he would go in a hundred on it. And if I could find others who would also add to it to make the $200 evening challenge at the first of the month every month, that we would commit to keeping Shirley's Challenge alive as a living memorial to Bruce, who would be pleased as punch by that. And I said that was a wonderful idea. And so here we are. It is the first program of the month. And I've done some outreach. And I mentioned this to Ralps in the chat room. And Ralps joined in. So we have $150 of the $200 Shirley's Challenge, with needing one more commitment at $50 to complete it. Now, the way Laborman explained his idea to me, he said, don't have people take what they're doing like 2 weeks from now and just move it back. It's got to be fresh so that we can generate the same thing that Shirley's Challenge was doing before. Laborman just told me you can go ahead and double my first of the month for this month. So Shirley's Challenge is on the table this evening, which gets us off to a very, very helpful start. There is a $200 challenge on the table right now. If that challenge is met by people kicking in up to two, you know, at however you do it, 5, 10, 20, 200, don't care, then that gets doubled. Your 100 becomes 2, your 10, 5 becomes 10, 10, 20, 20, 40, 50, 100, 75, 150, up to $200. So that's where we stand. Steve from Georgia Stan says, last time you went to D.C., you got sick as hell. Take care of yourself, friend. Oh, I will. Last time, I don't think D.C. made me sick. It was just the timing of it all. They sell yogurt in D.C. too. And so I should be okay. So that's where we stand. Technically speaking, it'll kind of put us behind the eight ball in terms of funding for the month, because even though we'll raise funds for next week, for this week, if I'm actually using it for the to because Cold River Mountain Watch doesn't have any money. Then we will, we'll have to figure it out as July goes on. But I hope you understand that, this is a necessity. This isn't just, you know, hey, let's go to D.C. One, I prefer to be here behind the microphone. Two, it's an arduous trip. Three, it's an expensive trip. Made especially so by how ungodly expensive hotels are at this time of year in D.C. So let me know your thoughts and hopefully your willingness to help. Half of Shirley's challenge for the month of July has just been met. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you so very much. That means there's $100 to go. And with that having been said, we'll move into the bulk of the program. I'm sorry it took 25 minutes to explain this, but that's a hell of a lot to explain. For my bear in mind, Agnes will be here next week, and she'll make sure that the she'll make sure that the rerun rolls every evening at 6 p.m. It'll probably be a rerun of this week. Well, no, maybe last week, because at least Thursday and Friday this week will only be two-hour programs, but you get the idea. So that's all of the housekeeping out of the way. Because it may be the day before Independence Day. It may be the Monday of a long holiday weekend. And my gracious sakes, I don't know what to make of the... Maybe it's just because I feel better than I've felt in a long time. Which is kind of weird for somebody who has the problems I have. But this has been the most exquisite, most beautiful Appalachian summer that I can remember in recent memory. Just gorgeous. It was a gorgeous weekend. Agnes and I, part of the time we worked steadily around the house. The other part of the time, we actually sat and relaxed. And it was very, very nice. Last night, I had some hickory smoked yogurt. But I fired up the gas grill because the old smoker just doesn't really have much starch left in it at all. But I fired up the gas grill and did some hamburgers and hot dogs. I invented a new hot dog. Nathan's All Beef were on sale up to the Wiggling Pig. The bun length ones, the good ones. So I grilled them. And in the $5 section, there were packages of four so-called steak burgers. And I grilled them. They both got melted hot pepper cheese. And the new hot dog is as follows. The Nathan's dog, the hot pepper cheese, a little stripe of Dijon mustard, a generous helping of chow chow. If you don't know what it is, you don't know what you're missing. Sauerkraut, dill cubes, and chopped pepperoncinis. It was kind of a cross between like that wonderful hot dog that I love from down where I grew up in Alabama and a Chicago dog, but I couldn't get Vienna Beef Franks, poppy seed hot dog buns, or those evil little arsenical green relish, or those vicious little sport peppers. But I fixed those for Ferg, and Ferg looked at me and said, oh, and there was a little Heinz 57 in there, too. Ferg looked at it and said, I don't know, Dad. I said, just try it. And about 3 minutes later, I hear, oh, wow, Dad. Those are awesome. So I think we came up with a good thing. So that was our fun yesterday. Beautiful day today. I had to go to Charleston with my daughter again. And made it back a couple hours ago. Gorgeous drive. I have a wonderful time when we travel together. She is at present over getting a new tire that to replace a blown out one on her rim. And if I know her, she will take her mother with her, she took her mother with her, and she will insist upon stopping at Secret Sandwich Society for the world's best French fries. But all things being equal, oh, and another program reminder, this program will be live on July the 4th. How about that? No retreads for either this evening or tomorrow. Tell your friends and neighbors. Live progressive programming on the 4th of July, even. So all of that, yes, as a matter of fact, Marty says, no onions on those dogs? Yes, there were onions on those dogs. To wit, grilled onions, grilled sweet onions, and they were yummy. But all of that having gone before us, we have business to conduct, because it's the third day of July, 2017. Oh, but it's so much more than that. No, that's the prayer meeting Wednesday language. You know what it is. It's Monday. That's right. It's Monday. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. We've got them all here. We have them all for you, friends and neighbors. Just a few steps off the Carnival Midway, right here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we have everything you could possibly desire in the way of the shocking, bizarre world of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, Republicans, libertarians, one and all. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, friends and neighbors. You can't tell the Morans without a program. And this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. No, you can't, you can't, you can't. But the fact of the matter is, we try, we try. And for those who sign on to support the Horn at about $10 a month with the subscription button, over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, well, by Jimmy, it turns into about, 16 or so cents per hour of programming all month long. It's the biggest bargain in media under the big top. A word of warning to those who would enter the Moran Monday tent. Keep a close eye and perhaps a grasping hand upon children, small animals, pets, little plastic bags with goldfish that will soon be dead, that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at fish bowls. Hang on to them all, even purses, wallets, European-style messenger bags. Hang on to every one of them, friends and neighbors, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You really, really will. Busy they have been. Dear heavenly days. Let's run over to Philadelphia, shall we? Mm-hmm. Where we have the story of a Moran by the name of Howard Kaplan. That's Kaplan with a C, A-P-L-A-N. Howard Kaplan. Howard Kaplan is 48 years old. And he's earned himself a bit of a reputation. It was back during the holiday season when Howard Kaplan interrupted a Christmas mass as he squalled and screamed and blathered about Pizzagate. You remember Comet Ping Pong Pizza, where the data dump by the fine folks at WikiLeaks led to right-wingers, white-wingers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, and, oh yes, Trumpanzees, becoming absolutely convinced that there was a child sex ring in the basement of a pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C. that didn't even have a basement. Eventually, one guy from North Carolina drove up just to shoot the place up. Mercifully, he didn't manage to kill anybody with his Freedom Protector. But shoot the place up, he did nonetheless. Well, this weekend, in Philadelphia, there was a rally for impeachment. People got together to call for the legal and peaceful removal from office of Donald J. Trump. A man who admits to having committed, random sexual abuse, if not sexual assault, against women. A man who has a bizarre fixation on women, is terrified of women who exhibit anything resembling power or influence or, you know, brains. Yeah, that Donald Trump. Donald Covfefe Trump. So they had an impeachment rally in Philadelphia where they were gathered to call for the impeachment of Donald Trump. Now, bear in mind, please, that Howard Kaplan, Moran, who has earned a reputation and developed a history of interrupting peaceful gatherings to impose his bizarre Trumpanzee self upon people. Well, he showed up to do the same thing, to agitate and rant and rave and cause trouble. On Sunday, yesterday, he went to the impeachment rally to oppose the people rallying for impeachment. He's previously earned himself a bit of a reputation, a little bit of white wing internet fame for carrying Hillary for prison signs around the city of brotherly love. And while there, he claims that he was beaten up by some Antifa people who were in attendance at the impeachment rally. He said that he said three men attacked him, and he said they were members of Antifa. He said they asked him in a really nice way about the Trump 2020 sign that he was carrying to try to agitate people who were there to call for Trump's peaceful and legal and constitutional removal from office. Speaking to the Philly Voice, he said, "Next thing I know, I'm on the ground. Felt like they hit me in the head with a bottle. They were stomping me a bit while I was fighting them off. They scattered. I looked around, disoriented. Thought they stole my backpack, but they didn't." He then said he chased one of the attackers that he said was fat. There was a transit cop there, and I yelled, "Fucking get him!" Fat boy got caught. I recognized the other guy because of the shirt he was wearing. I noticed it earlier in the day. They both got caught, and so did the third one. 32-year-old Daniel Vieira, 33-year-old Christopher Sheeran, and 40-year-old Sean Menny were all arrested. But because he's a Trumpanzee, Howard Kaplan, and because he's a moron, says, "No, those weren't the same guys." And according to the Philadelphia police, Daniel Vieira allegedly hit an officer in the back while they were arresting 33-year-old Christopher Sheeran. And then 40-year-old Sean Menny was arrested for punching a Trump supporter in the face. Now, meanwhile, Howard Kaplan. Is it Howard or Harold? No, it's Howard. So, because, you know, he's an authority. The other arrests are from a different case, but I saw them catch all three that jumped me. The detectives came to see me at Hahnemann Hospital to get details. It's more complicated than the other case since they didn't see the incident. I don't really know how to do a proper Philly accent. I'm going to have to get maybe Randy in PA and maybe Good Todd to teach me how to do a Philly accent. I got nothing. Meanwhile, apparently, Howard Kaplan, who went to the rally courting confrontation, picked up a black eye, got six staples in his head, and got his cornea scratched. So is this the I don't bring this story up to celebrate violence, because I don't celebrate violence. I don't endorse it. I don't support it. I don't advise it. I don't advocate it. That's not why we're talking about this story. I bring this issue up because I have a question. Why would you do this? It's a simple enough question. Why would you do this? You know those are not people with whom you share any commonality. I mean, we've talked in the past about how, you know, when the Klan has a rally, and I'm sure Howard Kaplan would be more than welcome at one of them, it's probably best just to leave them alone. Our fundamental and our basic urges are to not leave them alone, to in fact go and counter-protest against them. Because they're so hateful, because they're so nasty. But the less free publicity you give them, the better. But primarily, I mention this story because there's so much talk now about the coming civil war. The Klan and the neo-Nazis and yada, skinheads, what have you, have been blathering for years . Cool, I can study after the program. Sparky just sent me a how to do a Philadelphia accent training. Excellent. I presume it involves more than just using the F word a lot. I had some Philly Jersey guys in my fraternity back a million years ago in college, and they used the F word in every single possible position it could be used in the English language. They used it as a gerund. They used it as an infinitive. They used it as a noun. They used it as a verb. But there's got to be more to it than that. But they've been yammering and yearning for what they call a civil war for years, and the talk now has ramped up considerably. All about how they desperately, you know, they can't say they want one. Well, some of them do, but they certainly expect one. And that's worrisome. Very much worrisome indeed. So a question as we move into the discussion part of the program. Is there anything to be had? And I freely acknowledge, because it was on video, I confess, at first, I laughed at the video where Richard Spencer, Nazi, got punched in the face. But when you take into account that the other side has the vast majority of the firearms, and hard on to use them, and lives in states where simply being looked at side-eyed is cause for them to be able to shoot you dead and have the NRA cheer and talk about what a dangerous country we live in and how somebody just close the iron fist of freedom, the closed fist of freedom, around some liberal's throat, is it really a good idea? Because, see, this stupid bastard is now a martyr to the cause. And I'm sure his picture of him with his head swathed in a bandage like a baby bonnet, with blood running down his shirtless chest, has gone like wildfire all over the White Wing Internet. Whoever did this, assuming that someone from our ideological side did this, and I'm not fully prepared to make that assumption, but whoever did this has made protesting more dangerous for everybody else. And protesting is dangerous enough as it is. You can get your ass killed at a peaceful protest. The other side was already violent. Do we really need to give them any more cause, real or imagined, to be even more violent? That is the That's the nature of the inquiry. Because I don't see a future in the next couple of years in which there's less protest instead of more. Unless people simply say, screw it, you know, I'm just gonna sit down and wait for full on goose stepping fascism to get here with the spiffy uniforms and well, you know, we're not there yet. Unless people get their health care taken away from them and say, well, you know, I guess I had it coming. I think we can realistically expect more protest. That means more opportunities for people like Howard Pizzagate Kaplan to show up, ready to try to provoke a confrontation. And at what point in time, and this will engender legal questions, at what point in time does having a trumpansy screaming in your face constitute a threat against which one may reasonably engage in self-defense? Oh, sure, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, he said turn the other cheek. But you see what happened to him. And I fear there are a lot of people who are not going to be inclined to just ignore these fools. There probably should be much more training, because I think I'll go have a protest. Protesting in the age of Trump, or for that matter, in any other era, is best done when the people engaging in it have been taught how to go about it, and when there are people who are there specifically to de-escalate it. Because I will tell you this as surely as God made little green apples, and if you eat too many, you'll get a bellyache and the runs. we cannot win a violent confrontation with the white wing, with all those lawful gun owners one squeeze of the trigger away from being awful gun owners. But that's just me. But I can point to numerous moments in history, both when violence has been undertaken and resulted in disastrous consequences, and when nonviolence has been the path that has been followed and has resulted in at least some success. Remember, we don't know how many members of the police forces of the United States are members of the Three Percenters or the Oath Keepers, both of which are fascist hate organizations. We don't know. We just don't. So I suggest that if you're going to participate in any protests, study up on nonviolence. If you haven't been to a training before about peaceful, nonviolent civil disobedience, attend one if you can get to it. Because, like I said, there will probably be a lot more opportunities. And beyond opportunities, a lot more damned good reasons to protest in the coming weeks, months, and years. I almost guarantee it. And it would be best if we could somehow figure out how not to have people killed in the process. Or maimed or anything else. So that takes us up to the top of the hour. Thank you very kindly. New subscriber. Stephen from California has jumped in as a new subscriber and taken up 5 slots. Thank you, Stephen. And in conjunction with this evening's challenge, Robert jumped in as well. And I can happily say that Shirley's challenge has been met, meaning that Charlene and Stevens and Robert's contributions all just got doubled. So thanks, one and all. Since we're going to try to knock down the whole week, it would be great if we could just keep going. And that way, if we have a shortfall, say, on the 2-hour programs Thursday and Friday, we'll be prepared to meet it. So that having been said, we've got ever so much more Moran Monday to deal with. Lots and lots of Morans. Definitely lots of Morans. That having been said, if you if you'd like to engage in some conversation radio, which is what this is all about, we've got lots of ways for you to reach the program. One of them is, of course, the stress line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. The other one is 304-574-8178. And, of course, from anywhere on planet Earth, Skype to Skype, as long as you and I are connected as contacts. If we're not, send me a contact request on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. We'll be hooked right up. And we'll get the conversation. We'll get the conversation going. Okie dokie. All right. Email, of course, comes in to bobkincaid@gmail.com. And Twitter, at Bob Kincaid. Facebook, Bob Kincaid. And that pretty much takes care of all the means of contact, short of like standing out on the stoop or and yelling or using semaphore. And so we'll take a break. And see what you've got in mind in the way of conversation. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And make sure everything's all hooked up here. All right, then. We'll be back. Stick around. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Think about reaching out, maybe get some help from above. boys like a pack of hounds, speculating what they might find out.
It don't matter now,
you're all washed up.
Don't know where things went wrong. Might have been when you were young and strong.
Yeah, it's the eagle there at the very end that just makes it. American Dream, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young for this Monday Independence Day Eve. But technically, I get lost. Was the Declaration actually signed on the 3rd, not publicized till the 4th, or was it signed on the 4th and not publicized till the 5th? I can't quite remember. Meanwhile, I had a note from Ron and Raleigh saying, "Hey, Bob, why not just watch Rocky? I think that's a good primer on the Philadelphia accent." Adrian! You mean that? That's it? P.S., did you like the American Gods finale? Well, yeah, once I realized it was the finale, the whole show's just a delight. But I get the same 8 episodes, that's it? And I got to wait till when? I realized I got the link to Altered Carbon on the IMDb page. I still got no clue when that comes along. Maybe I missed it. Maybe I just didn't read it right. But we get the next season of Westworld sometime in the year 2525 if any man is still alive or something. Oy, this is the one downside to the new media landscape. Sure, you can binge watch till hell freezes over, but the gap between seasons. I'm still waiting to see who wins at the Battle of Culloden with the next season of Outlander, and they've already shot that eons ago, and we're still waiting. Come on. Mostly, I like it for the Scots accents. That's what I like it for. Okay, there's some nudity too, but you know. Hey, let's run over to the stress line and check in with Charlie down in Tennessee. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going, Bob?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
Well, I guess I'm doing okay. I tell you what, the thing that has really, you know, it has really swayed my opinion of the United States is the Yanez Castillo case, especially after I saw the video that was released after the verdict was rendered, and I mean, I have never seen a cop just unholster a weapon and fire it, and the guy had never even attempted to take his gun out of his pocket. I mean, and then there's some lawyer up there that used to be a highway patrolman in Pennsylvania. His name is McMahon, and that's who represented Castillo. I've already emailed him, told him he needs to go to hell. I mean, this is amazing. I don't even think that Yanez is even sorry for what he did.
Well, but I mean, he got away scot-free, Charlie. Although I guess he's now former Officer Yanez, isn't that correct?
Yeah, they released him from the St. Andrews Police Department. But you mean to tell me if I go out and shoot somebody in cold blood, the only thing I'm going to do is lose my job? There's something wrong here.
Well, no, you don't have that magic uniform.
To hell with a magic uniform, you know, a policeman should be as subject to the law as I am, and I'm sorry. I just, you know, after I saw that video that was released after the trial, and then I saw that lawyer McMahon, I think he spelled it M-A-C-M-A-I-N, say, well, that wouldn't make that much difference at the trial. they suppressed evidence is what they did. And, you know, they need to petition for a retrial, for a mistrial, and have a retrial.
Can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it. Won't happen. Double jeopardy.
Well, if the state suppresses evidence, you mean to tell me that you can't declare a mistrial?
There was no the trial went all the way to its conclusion. There was no there was no mistrial.
Yeah. And then the St. Andrews town, the town of St. Andrews up in Minnesota, tried to bribe the family with a $3 million settlement for the civil lawsuit. I mean, there is something wrong here.
Oh no! Hold on, Charlie. I'm as disgusted by this process as you are. But there, we do have to at least acknowledge reality. And what I mean by that is the fact that a civil settlement was reached it wasn't a matter of bribing the family. A civil process is entirely separate from a criminal process.
That's true.
Okay, you remember how O.J. Simpson was acquitted of the criminal charge but wound up getting found liable for in the civil suit? Remember that?
Right. Uh-huh.
Okay, part of that is because a criminal case carries with it a burden of proof that guilt be shown beyond a reasonable doubt. And in most jurisdictions, the jury has to reach that conclusion unanimously. A unanimous verdict either of acquittal or of conviction. Either, okay, and if you've got a couple of holdouts one way or the other, that's how you wind up with a hung jury and a mistrial.
Right.
Okay, so there's
the jurors up in Minnesota didn't have the balls to go on with their convictions and say, okay, there's going to be two or three holdouts here. If the rest of you don't like it, then screw you. There's going to be some little holdouts here.
I understand what you're saying, Charlie, and I agree with most of it. But the bottom line for why Gerardo Ollanez was acquitted is his uniform. The fact that he is a police officer. Because the murder conviction rates in this country overall are far higher for ordinary people than they are for police officers. Police officers are the enforcement arm of the courtroom in which they are sitting. And consequently, jurors tend to look at police officers and give them a break they do not necessarily deserve. And they give them credibility they don't deserve. Okay? Yet part of the reason that O.J. Simpson was acquitted was because the defense did a magnificent job proving that the police did not deserve that bonus that they get because they're the police. It was all over when Mark Furman was proven in court to be a racist. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
No getting around that.
But here's the thing about it. I used to work for a company that did fire, burglar alarm, and access control. I did Unix support for them. And I was sitting at an airport in Tennessee, and I was talking to the police officers that work at the airport, that did the airport security. And this has been back in 1998, 1999 time frame. And one of the officers was sitting there, and he said, what people don't realize is that an officer can tell somebody something that can tell somebody that something is the law, and they will believe it, and 99% of it's bullshit.
No argument from me.
And, you know, people just need to wake up. I mean, you know, we need to hold the police department to the same accountability as a citizen. And, you know, these overly religious people, they need to start reading the Bible, because in the book of James it says, be not many masters as you will be held in higher accord. And it's talking about teachers there. You need to tell what the truth is. But evidently police officers aren't held to that same standard. Their religion tells them this, but they're not willing to do that because the police somehow don't have to do that. And it's mind-boggling to me when you have two sets of standards.
I understand that, but they are not two separate standards in law. They are two separate standards by effect. And those standards, the same thing applies to white defendants versus black defendants. Okay? It's been shown time after time after time that a person of color is far more likely to be sentenced to death by a jury than a white person is. That is not to say there are not white people on death row. There are. But it's what the law calls a disparate impact. Now,
but you got to remember, if you want to approach it from a scientific point of view, black people came from the same place white people came from. It's just whenever people wandered into different areas of the world, there were minor genetic changes took place. Some people are darker complected than others. Some people are lighter complected. Some people have different hair texture.
Oh, that's a whole program, okay?
There's no difference between black people and white people, and these overly religious Nazi pigs need to realize that. They need to just look at reality. There is no difference.
No, there's not, but it is entrenched in at least 500 to 600 years of colonialism and patriarchy, and that's not necessarily the kind of thing you can fix with a statute. Now, what I'm saying is not by way of excusing it, but you have to define it, and you have to understand it before you can begin to fix it, Charlie.
I mean, there's just certain things that are right and certain things are wrong, and for somebody to just blatantly say that people of you're not the same race as me, so that makes you inferior.
Yeah, and the most wrong part about it is the idea of race. Oddly enough, my daughter and I were having a conversation going down the mountain. We were talking about this very issue. There is, and this is hard for some people to get their heads around, there is no such thing as race. You can take the concept of race and you can put it in the same in the same box with Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, and any other mythological concept. From my standpoint, the Christian concept of the Trinity, put that in the same box.
There is
no such thing as race. There is ethnicity, but there is no such thing as race.
We're all humans. I don't care what color your skin is, what color your eyes are, what texture your hair is. We are all humans. And for somebody to just blatantly just put out a firearm and then lie about it, lie about somebody else for catching the firearm. There's no way that guy could have got the. There's no way Mr. Castillo could have got that firearm out of his pocket sitting down. It takes a long time to get something out of your pocket when you're sitting down. And if you look at that film video clip, the guy just walks up and all of a sudden pulls his weapon out, bam, 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 bam. And, you know, I've got more sense than to believe that. If I was on the jury, I'd have told, I'd have said, that guy's sort of bullshit. Well, I don't know. I couldn't have said that unless the St. Andrews Police Department was honest enough to release the video before the verdict was reached.
Well, you're getting some appreciation from the chat room. Just got a note from Silent R. Lamar saying, "I like your caller, Bob. Please let him know from me." So, Charlie, what you're doing is you're saying what a lot of people are thinking. And
so, of course, it's right. I mean, any right thinking human would think that way.
Yeah. But
I'm really hacked off about it.
And you should be. You absolutely should be. And frankly, I imagine it might be a little, it's cold comfort, but it is comforting to people to hear folks with a Southern accent as pissed off as you are.
So, I don't know. Well, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk.
All right, Charlie, you have yourself a good evening. You stay safe.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Charlie calling from down Tennessee way. Let's check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening, as we used to say down on Peckerwood.
Good evening. How are you?
Good evening.
How are you?
I just had a plate of barbecue delivered to me because they're not going to have it at Tudor's tomorrow.
Ooh. Jim, we got to talk. Don't eat the barbecue from Tudor's, okay?
That's pretty good up here now.
Well, yeah, but it's the same barbecue every. It comes in on a truck.
Okay.
But no, I mean it's not bad. It's just shredded pork. Where did you get this evening's barbecue from?
Do what now? I'm sorry.
Where did this evening's barbecue come from?
A friend of mine brought it by.
Well, one of these days, have your friend bring you some barbecue. I mean, granted, it's a chain, but they do a pretty passing fair job. Have them bring you a plate from Dickie's.
Okay.
There's one up on Harper Road in with the Shell station, and there's another one next out on Eisenhower, next to Five Guys and the AT&T store.
Very good. I'll have to remember that. Bob, I just saw one of the most dreadful things on television today that I have seen in a very long time.
Yeah?
And it was a live picture of Chris Christie.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, oh, no, that...
Wait a minute. Let me tell you. And a modified Speedo was a striped top with his legs just spread as far apart as they could go.
I know.
I called a friend of mine in Hollywood today, and he said, you know, I want to get a hold of that, and I will get a hold of it, and I can use what Alfred Hitchcock used in The Boys or The Birds. And he said, I can rotoscope all those bats or whatever they were, all those birds flying out of that thing.
Oh, no, that was nasty.
He was nasty. Oh, my Lord, he's closed the state down. He's enjoying the beach, and he's sitting out there looking like Okra, the bitch whale, and just having a good old time. And none of the other people could go out there and enjoy the sun and stuff.
Isn't that ridiculous?
No, it's ridiculous. Not ridiculous, but ridiculous.
It is. It's ridiculous.
It is indeed.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe given the look of the foot, maybe it was ridiculous.
It was a sight to be seen, and I said, I flipped the channel. And as soon as I went from CNN to MSNBC, there it was
again.
Yeah. And all I can say is, I will not have to take my appetite suppressant for at least 3 days.
Do you remember? Do you remember the classic line as uttered by Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now?
I don't remember now. No, I don't. I'm sorry.
The horror. The horror. Yeah, that's what I mean, that's what I got when I was. But the whole thing is a comedy of Republican errors.
Oh yeah.
This misanthrope governor Chris Christie is such a punk thug that he can't come to an agreement with the legislature because they're Democrats and he's a Republican, and he's got to be a tough guy. And so he's willing to shut the state down, furlough employees, and, you know, shut down state parks at the beach in a fit of partisan political pique.
And there his fat ass is, sitting up on the beach in an outfit that looked like something of the end of whatever happened to Baby Jane. And all he did was Joan Crawford or Betty Davis over top of him wanting him, do you want an ice cream cone, Blanche? That's all he needed to do. I thought to myself,
you know, I don't know. I flashed on Sydney Green Street when I said, come here, closer.
But, you know, he always dressed well, and he was very heavy, but he always dressed very well, and he was extremely sophisticated, and the weight didn't mean anything to me. He was just a big man, you know?
Right.
But this guy was just, oh, Lord, I don't even want to go into it anymore. By the way, I understand that our friend Mr. Mantan's going to go up to New Jersey for his holiday.
Well, he's got a golf course there that he can drive his golf course he can drive his golf cart on the greens.
Let me ask you something. This may be before your time. It's sort of off the way here. But if you ever remember a stuff called Mantan?
I'm proud to say I don't.
Well, it came out in the 60s. And it was supposed to give you a marvelous growing tan over whichever portion of the body that you put it. Okay, as they found out that the basic ingredient in it was the type that they dyed sheep's wool from, and people would put that stuff on. One guy put it on, he came to school. I was in high school one day, and I just asked him, I said, I didn't know you were playing Othello.
Oh, dear. You just got a note from Ron in Raleigh.
Oh, God.
He said, damn, Jim. For God's sake, tell Jim it's dinner time. Fat bastard in deshabille has put me off my feet, my feed.
Well, I already told you. We tell Chris, I'm sorry, but I'm off my appetite suppressant until Friday, probably. And to think of that guy and the stuff he has said.
Well, did you see the news conference? He didn't know when he was being questioned about being at the beach. He didn't know there had been a flyover with a long zoom lens taking pictures of him.
I know. And one guy asked him a question, and he said, that's all.
Next question.
He's just real rude as hell.
I mean, at least our right-wing southern governors, well, they've got enough panache to be able to brush off that sort of thing. With a mercy sakes, and oh my goodness! I mean, look at Robert Bentley down in Talabama, Jim. He had to resign after he was caught in flagrante delicto, which is Latin for bed, with another woman who was not his godly, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered, evangelical wife. But he didn't shut down the beaches of Alabama to do it. Now,
no, he didn't. He just, I think, went on his very way, and she said, yeah, you know, aloha on a steel guitar. You know, one thing about Senator Graham, and don't you remember his PAC committee funding American government, okay?
Yep.
Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm the only one laughing. You're not. But anyway, you know, Graham has been a little bit decent, more decent than some of these people. I mean, he does have a little bit of panache, a little bit of manners, and...
Well, Jim, know. I mean, we're both Southern fellas. We understand he was raised right.
And, of course, he was, you know, he was in the Air Force. That's one thing I'm going to have to give him for, even though he was a lawyer. He wore that blue uniform, and I've always had the greatest respect for it, because I did, too. And, you know, I just... I sort of give Lizzie wide berth on some of these things. I try to.
Well, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, he condemned the tweets, but here's my problem, Jim. I am loath and disinclined to take too seriously all this pearl clutching and hand wringing, be it from a man or a woman who happens to be a Republican, about what a vile and nasty human being Donald Trump is. Because there's nasty and vile, and then there's not fit to perform the duties of the office. I think we are already well into, not on the way to, Jim, but into the realm of not fit to perform the duties of the office. Yes, I understand Pence is what comes next. I'm not.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not concerned with the partisan politics of it at the moment. I'm look. If you had a Democratic president in office who was behaving like Donald Trump, I like to think I would have the integrity to say he got to go.
Well, that he definitely needs to do. He needs to go. And where he goes, I do not care. And in the name of God, go. Let him go for any good that he has been doing here, if I may paraphrase that line. He really is.
That would be Cromwell to the
Parliament.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is...
In the name of God, go.
In the name of God, go. You've tarried here too long for any good that you have been doing. Depart, I say, and have done with you. And that's exactly how I feel about that son of a bitch. And if he were to knock on my front door, I would call him a son of a bitch
to his face.
The door in his face. I would, just like when W came over here. Bill O'Brien said, well, what would you do if he knocked on your door? I said, I wouldn't open it if he told me who it was. And if he did, I would slap it right in his face. That's when Bush came here back in whatever, when
no,
God was a boy.
I remember.
Remember all that?
Oh, I remember. Yeah, that's 2004.
Yeah, it's been a while. God, that's been 13 years ago. Can you believe it?
No, sometimes I really can't, Jim. But that's the point I'm getting at. You can disapprove of those tweets all you want. Until you are ready to, since we're going to quote stuff tonight, until you're ready to screw your courage to the sticking place and do something about it, i.e. begin the necessary processes that lead to his removal from office, then all the disapproving in the world, to quote Mayella Yule, don't come to nothing, Mr. Finch.
Well, I hope he does continue those tweets, because as long as he does, and as long as he continues to behave as he does, he is the best friend the Democratic Party has ever had. He really is.
Well, I hope you're right, but I haven't seen any indication that there are people ready to just jump ship and give us a Democratic and give us a Democratic Congress in 18. And a Democratic president in 20.
Well, you know, just let Mr. Trump try to do some of the stuff he wants to do. And it may cause a lot of hardship on a lot of people if they get that stupid bill through. But that stupid bill won't last long. And it will engender and create so much discord and hate, not to mention hurt and human suffering, than anything since, I don't know when, the Holocaust of types. And I'll guarantee you that will teach Republicans about what they, what people about what Republicans really bloody are. And I think that that will ultimately be their denouement. I certainly hope so. I hope I live to see it. Because they're just headed right down the broad bridge, along with Trump as their leader, carrying their guide on to the road to destruction. And, you know, I could look at still pictures of him. I would love to see what Andy Leibovitz could do with his picture. And he has got to be the ugliest man I have seen in a long time. But even behind that, even behind the misshapen features due to, I guess, excess living and age, whatever, gravity, I would think he'd had some work done by now. But anyway, he's got to be, and his eyes, the way he just squints those eyes together, he's just...
You mean those piggy
mean.
Those piggy little eyes?
Yes, he's just mean. He's meaner than cat shit. And Rufus, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do it. But anyway, he's Rufus sitting up here having his dinner off my breakfast tray on the bed.
Not, good, yeah.
He just looked at me and said...
Rufus is a cat of leisure.
Rufus is a cat of leisure, and to tell you the truth, I was gone so long, he had really lost a lot of weight. And now I'm back. He eats three meals a day and has gained about 8 pounds.
Now, we are talking here about a 24-pound cat, right?
29.
Well,
I'd say he was about 20, and I was really worried about him. Because, you know, he's a large bone critter, and, you know, any loss of flesh of any type, or, you know, it really shows, okay? And I was really worried about him. But the lady who was, or the friends who were coming back came and said, Jim, he's just grieving for you. That's exactly what they told me, and they were right, absolutely. But to get away from that, Rufus is doing fine now. He's just kind of, he would curl up and put his neck, I've got one of these old bathrobes with a hood in it, and he's put his head in that hood. So I think he's down for a long summer's nap. You
that's a happy cat.
He's a happy cat. How's the weather over there?
Like I said, it has been the most beautiful summer I remember in a very long time.
Well, I can tell you one thing about outside here. It's as hot as a crotch.
Well put. Wait a minute. Stand
but
by.
But I will say this.
Okay, got some cowbell.
Thank you. That was from Eddie Bay, by the way. That's not original for me.
No, I remember, yes.
Well, thank you for not disclosing my plagiarism or whatever you want to call it. But it's good for the patio.
No, Jim, it's an homage.
An homage.
Yes, it's an homage.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'd down on bended knee if I could. But the patio's in good shape. I've got all kinds of impatiens and ferns and, oh, Lord, it's got trees out there. And it was just really good for me to clear all that off and disperse all the winter from it and put out a carpet and all that stuff in it. Just a runner, not a carpet. But anyway, it was a lot of good for me. It's made me feel so much better. It really has.
Oh, I'm glad it's made me feel this warm weather, and we were supposed to get thunderstorms all weekend. Didn't get a drop over here. Not a drop.
Well, you never can tell. They might show their ugly heads as well. That's for damn sure. And a thunderstorm around here is nothing to laugh at. That's for damn sure. I mean, you've got those peals of thunder echoing off those mountains and coming into those valleys. And, of course, you've got the pyrotechnics with it, with the lightning. Oh, just that they could stay away. It would bother me if they never came back. But, you know,
it's this time of year. I, Jim, I just cross my fingers about this time every year and go, don't want another derecho. Don't want another derecho. Don't want another derecho.
That thing just wiped you out.
Oh, we were off the air for 2 weeks. It was terrible.
I can remember the last words you said before that thing hit. And you were not real happy. And it burned out so many appliances in your home, and You, God.
Oh, we're still recovering from it, and we're, you know, we're 5 years on.
Hmm.
Because, you know, FEMA was no help. And,
oh, no.
And you know, you can't just go out and replace water heater, washing machine, dryer, stove and refrigerator, you know, in one fell swoop. Don't happen.
My God, you must have caught, what, 50,000 bolts in your home?
I don't know. But it blew up. If there was not an uninterruptible power supply in front of it, it blew.
That was a nasty business. That was a really nasty business.
And it ruined a bunch of the uninterruptible power supplies. But it protected all the studio equipment.
Well, except for one thing, which you had, I think it limited your ability to talk to more than one person. Or something.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It didn't come in via, that was into an uninterruptible power supply too, but it came in on the phone line. Because, as I found out about a month ago, for as long as there's been internet coming in here, it was grounded wrong.
So, I tell you, Bob, as technology has crowned you in certain ways, it has truly crucified you when it comes.
To I'm nailed right in, Jim.
You sure are. Let me ask you some other thing. What have you heard any more about the Trump son-in-law, Mr. Kushner? Is he still, he's hiring all these high-priced New York lawyers and stuff like that. I just wonder what he's hiding under his...
Well, look, you have to understand that Kushner is, you know, his family owns that...
Flop house in Maryland.
No, they own all those tenements in Maryland, but moreover, they also own a building at 666 Park Avenue.
Really?
And they're damn near underwater on it.
Well.
And so, you know, if you watch that documentary, The Dubious Friends of Donald Trump, which I've mentioned on a number of occasions, by a Dutch documentary outfit. They're kind of like the PBS of the Netherlands.
Right.
Then you'll find out that Donald Trump has been mobbed up.
God, yeah. How the hell do you think he got all past all those people in construction in New York City? And I wonder how many no-show jobs that, you know, they furnished him and all kinds of stuff like the way they do, or... When he threatened them, they would stop delivering materials and stuff. And, you know, he was in good company.
Well, and see, so, you know, there's probably something there, even though I'll probably get another email from somebody saying, there's nothing to all this Russia business. Yeah, there kind of is. And, you know, I'm disinclined to take the word of, say, Julian Assange over career intel people. I'm not talking about the intel. I'm not talking about the political appointees. I'm talking about the decent human beings
the
career people that don't change with the political, whose only job is to do the best they can as they understand it.
And fulfill the mission, basically.
Yeah.
And try to get around some of these idiots who are up there for two or four years. And they realize that. They realize this, you know, yeah, we'll say yes, sir. And we'll do exactly what we want to do, because that's the attitude of the career service toward these political appointees. Because, you know, they serve only at the pleasure of you-know-who. And who's to say when you-know-who is going to tell them to go you-know-where?
Exactly. Well, you know, the executive branch is a damn mess right now, Jim.
Yeah, listen, whatever happened to old Slicer or whatever his name is?
He hasn't found a horse's head in his bed yet, if that's what you're asking.
I haven't seen him. He's on TV. He's had that Huckabee woman on there. And, you know, I always look forward to, you know, not look forward to it, but I can guarantee you one thing. I have never seen such an administration as hostile toward the press as these people are. I mean, they're not hostile. They're just plain damn right hateful. And that's going to hurt them. I mean, those people in those watches, newspapers, and telepaths or whomever, they're going to be there a long time after Sean Slicer and his minions and his uppers have long since departed that city. I don't know where they pulled him from.
He came from the RNC.
Have you ever seen a picture of him in high school?
Yeah, and I've seen a picture of him in his fuzzy bunny suit too.
Oh no! What do you mean?
He's a furry. Sean Spicer?
Yeah.
Sean Spicer is a furry. He goes to Comic Con in his furry suit, and he wears his bunny suit on Easter. He is what is referred to in the cosplay world as a furry.
Oh, my God. He's about as funny as malaria.
No, not funny. Furry. F-U-R-R-Y. He likes to dress up as a bunny.
Well, does he have a dialogue?
I've never...
I just wondered if, you know, he was doing stand-up, because that's basically what he's doing when he comes on the air every day. When he was there, he's doing stand-up. Some of the answers that come out of that man's mouth, if they weren't so...
Well, but he has a long history of duplicity. He was the spokescreep for the Republican National Committee.
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Well, that explains it then. But honestly and truly, I mean, I think the press is really getting very, very upset with him, and they're pretty sure they're not going to even buy come into those things. They're not going to want to come.
But no, they'll keep showing up because that's their raison d'être. If you remember the White House press corps, you have to go to the White House press briefings. But the other part of it, though. And I talked about this a little bit on Friday evening, is that, and I mentioned it earlier, too, you know, pearl clutching and hand-wringing. You and I were just talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard various members of the for-profit media get right up next door to a call for 25th Amendment action.
Well,
they'll say that he's unhinged. They'll say that he's demented.
Well,
they'll say that he is mentally unwell.
May he stay there so long.
Well, but the thing is, none of that amounts to a hill of beans until, because you got to remember, we are not a civically minded people. We do not know, you know, 99.9% of the Republican Party thinks that Jesus and the pursuit of happiness are mentioned in the Constitution, okay?
Well, yeah.
They're not, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just say he's unhinged. You have to take the next step and say, and therefore he must be removed from office under the rules set forth in the 25th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. You have to actually say that. It's kind of like Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan at the well, okay?
I understand.
All those other times that she had pumped the water over her hand, in her mind and in her heart, Helen knew it was water.
Right.
But it did not matter that she knew that until she could say and spell out into Annie Sullivan's hand, water. Because that meant that she recognized her surroundings. And until members of the for-profit media, until the Joe and Mikas, until the Brian Williamses, and the Wolf Blitzers, and the rest of them until they can say this man must be removed via the mechanism of the 25th Amendment or impeached, it doesn't matter.
Well, I'll be damned if all those people didn't do a hell of a lot to get him where he is.
Well, exactly.
I mean, how many billions of dollars worth of free press did that bastard get when he'd get on those party rallies of his and throw him out, kick him out, I'll pay for the lawyer, and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it was just, why was that? I just couldn't understand why.
I wish I could punch him in the face. I wish I could punch him in the face.
Do that. And I'll come and I'll sit on his face and I'll really kill him.
But see, it just, until, and you wonder, and you don't, I mean, you wonder at your peril what it's going to take to push these for-profit media millionaires over into saying what has to be said, Jim. Because, like, the thing over the weekend with him tweeting out the video from back when he was a star in the wrestling business, which all by itself, the fact that as an American citizen, you have to say, hey, you know what, the President of the United States used to be a professional wrestler. And not a respectable one like Jesse Ventura, but, you know, a real turd working with Vince McMahon. You got to come to grips with that, and then you have to go, oh, shit. And he's married to the first woman ever to be First Lady of the United States who has a history of repeatedly taking her clothes off in exchange for money. Oh, shit! We're in a mess. Okay?
We are indeed.
But my point is, so he tweeted out that video over the weekend of Vince of the CNN logo superimposed over Vince McMahon's face as he pummeled him on the concrete floor next to the wrestling ring, which was embarrassing enough.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to...
But then it's a Ginsu commercial, but wait, Jim, there's more. I don't know if you're aware of this or not. It turns out that, you know, it's not like little Boron has mad video editing skills.
Mm-hmm.
Trump got that video from a guy out in the white wing part of the internet who has a history of putting up anti-Semitic memes.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, one of the things, and it's come to light, and the guy who exposed it has received death threats from Trumpansies now. It turns out that the guy who created that video that Trump tweeted also created a meme, and anybody who wants to see it can just go to my timeline at Bob Kincaid on Twitter. He created a meme with photographs of all the on-air people at CNN.
Mm-hmm.
And he put a Star of David on each one who's Jewish.
Well, what about the photograph he has in his own home of him being Time Man of the Year, which was totally false? He has never been Time Man of the Year. Never. The whole thing was photoshopped.
Yeah, it's a lie, but I want to back up because I don't want to just blow past that other thing. This guy that he was retweeting or whose video he tweeted is a goddamn Nazi, Jim.
Well, there are a lot of them around, Bob. There sure are.
He's and so the president of the and you know, this got pointed out during the campaign too. He would tweet Nazi memes.
Yeah.
So that means somebody inside, because again, you can't think that he's got the savvy to go out and just find this stuff. It's being found for him.
Oh,
and
yes,
it's probably being found by that Stephen Miller creep and, of course, racist Bannon, who is the Dr. Goebbels of the present administration.
Isn't he a horror? He looks like John L. Lewis with a bad, bad hangover. He really does. Sorry, Mr. Lewis. I apologize.
Well, I was going to say, John L. going to get up out of the ground and come after you, Jim.
I know, but I mean,
I mean, John L. Lewis may have been a Republican, but damn.
Well, I mean, but this guy always looks like he has been a one hell of a bender. And, you know, as far as this thing with Mr. Trump is concerned, yeah, Donald, carry it on. Carry it on. You just do what you got to do and get more stupid and get more ridiculous and to even the most critical or non-critical opponent will decide this man ain't fit to be at 1600. Hell, he's not fit to be in a rehab place. He needs to be put in a mental asylum. I really think there's something mentally wrong with that man. When I meet people, when I have met people, I have this, maybe I stared in the mirror too much, but I have this ability to know when their elevator does not hit the top floor, when they are a couple sandwiches short of a picnic.
When they're a knife shy of a chandelier?
Yeah, God, whatever. They're just plain nuts. And this guy is just plain nuts. And I heard the other day, and I'll let you go. I know you got people want to talk. But the other nations of the world, do not consider him the leader of the free world anymore. That is no longer his title.
Now, this morning he tweeted that getting ready to have a phone call with France and Germany. And my immediate thought was, well, try not to fuck it up, asshole.
They don't want to hear from him. God, did he do enough damage at the NATO summary and got out there and just insulted the shit out of everybody he could and shoved people around like he was some bully? I mean, this man isn't a statesman. He behaves like a dockside bully is what he is. And to tell you the truth, I wish Ernst Stavro Blofeld would get in his helicopter with those two prongs on it and get him and his vice president up the rear end and drop them down a smokestack.
Speaking figuratively, of course.
Of course, you know I am. I would never want anything like to happen, Bob.
Exactly.
You know, I'm such a peaceful man.
But we have to make that clear for Agent Fred.
Agent Fred is probably saying, you know, that guy's got some sense.
Agent Fred's a career guy. What do you want?
He's a career guy. He's probably a GS-7, GS-9, trying to make 11 if he can. And he's trying to say, you know, I'm supposed to take this stuff down and not agree with it. But, you know, I believe that a lot of this thing coming out of Bob Kincaid's radio, it makes a lot of fucking sense. And that's about the highest accolade I can pay you right now.
Well, really. Jim, I will wish you well. Remember, maybe have some. Let me just remind you, because it's 4th of July and everything. The pulled pork at Dickie's is good. The brisket is yummy. Their spicy jalapeno cheddar smoked sausage.
Oh God,
yummy! But the best thing they've got there is their smoked turkey.
I'll bet.
It is turkey breast. They slice it thin, and it's just beautiful.
But you love those jalapenos, don't you?
Oh yes.
Oh God, if I were to eat one, and you were to strike a match near me, I would go up like.
You'd be
in the moon.
Yeah, you'd be the 25th man on the moon.
I would make the first. First buzz bomb looked like it was coming from, I don't know. Oh, Lord. I didn't want to think about it because I'm just real sensitive to hot stuff like that. I just can't enjoy it. I can remember picking peppers off of a vine, and my mother told me, you know, wear gloves. And I didn't. And I swear to God, I had my fingers on ice for at least 6 hours.
Well, at least you had the common sense not to go and take a liquid call of nature, because you don't want that down there.
No, I'll tell you something. This is something I want to warn people about. And this is real. Be very careful about what antibiotics your doctor gives you and how powerful they are. Because if you get something like Levaquin or some of the more powerful things, these drugs will they're good. They will destroy not only the bad bacteria, off of the flora in your intestines, and you're going to be needing a place to sit down for at least 3 or 4 times a day.
Oh yeah, you got it. You got
it. C. diff.
You got to. You got to.
You ever heard of that?
Yes, it is. Yes, I have.
Oh
yeah.
Lord, have mercy.
Well, Jim, I thank you very kindly, and I wish you a happy Independence Day. I'll be back again tomorrow. I'll be back again tomorrow night. So we'll talk soon. All right.
I'm glad you have been. I always look forward to see you. I could get you on the thing. I always got all these strange graphics, like big arrows, and it was all enlarged print. I don't know what was going on with that.
That's bizarre. Might have been a domain name server thing. All right, Jim. We'll talk soon.
Okay, buddy. You
all
take
right.
care.
All right. My best to Rufus. Later. Bye now.
Rufus, bye.
Our buddy Jim calling from not too far from here. Listen, don't give me grief for recommending Dickies. There are many things to recommend Appalachia. One of the things that does not recommend Appalachia are two things that we cannot get here. We do not have a long-standing tradition of good, independent little barbecue joints. We don't have that. And secondly, we do not have a tradition of little independent fried fish places. And that's just a shame. But they're not there. I mean, there's two places you can get. Okay, I mean, you can get the fish burger at McDonald's, the fish burger at Wendy's, the fish burger at Arby's. There's Long John Silver's. I think they've even got a fish burger at Bojangles Chicken now. My liver just quivered at the mention of Long John Silver's. Over at Tamarack, you can get a nice piece of pan-fried trout. It's very nice. But for just a little place to go and get some great fried catfish, like you can get all over the South, nada. Nothing. Bupkis. And when you don't have it, you do miss it. Hey, look, it's good Todd down in South Carolina. Hey, Todd.
Friend.
What's happening?
Roman. Countrymen. Trumpeteers, lend me your ear. Behold, the only thing greater than yourself, Donald Trump. This motherfucker is out of control.
Yeah, he is.
I had to fucking break out Shakespeare for this motherfucker. Now, at this point, our leaders, I mean, come on. Pence is no fucking, you know, an angel. what is it? The whole world's looking like, well, when are they going to do this? When are they going to get this shit together? Us.
And, you know, after the 8 years of the reign of error, they figured maybe we'd gotten it out of our system, Todd. But no, we still had some, we had a reserve of stupid. We had a whole reservoir of stupid. And you know what? It may not be out of our system yet because we haven't learned. I mean, look, FDR got us through the Depression, through the Second World War. And by 1952, America's sitting there going, you know what I'd like to have? You know what I think we need? We need a Republican president and a Republican Congress. That's what we need. Things are just too good here. We need to fuck ourselves a little bit. You're my sister. You're my sister. Yeah, and we did.
You know what? I'm glad you posed it that way because, you know, what's interesting. You remember it must have been a week ago when Paul, the I'm so smart, but I'm really a dumbass Ryan.
Yeah.
Was like, well, look, our president, look at all these laws he's passed. He didn't pass shit. He was fucking lying. Those were executive orders.
Well, lies are what lying is what liars do best.
I maybe I'm wrong. I call you because sometimes, I'm wrong a lot. I'm right sometimes. I'm wrong a lot. But I don't think that motherfucker has passed any legislation too much I don't think so. You know, executive orders are different. At least when the black guy was in there, it was a big deal, right?
Oh, America was dying. And right wing, and that's one of the, my favorite right wing arguments, Todd. Well, we had to sit here and suffer through 8 years of that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper. Young, just shut up and deal with Trump. He about killed our nation, tried to destroy the Constitution, and tried to took in everybody's guns. Just sit down, and shut up, let Trump make America great again. You'll be happy.
You hear it at the Speedy. What is it? No, Sheets. You hear it at Sheets too, don't you?
I hear it everywhere.
That's some shit. These people, that's what I'm saying. See, it's complicated now.
Dude, I know where you live. You can't pretend that you don't hear it too.
It's scary. I'm telling you, like, when they delivered my mother's refrigerator, I had to go over to her house, and I'm talking to these guys, and they're like, man, they fucked that refrigerator up. We had to send it back. But I knew that was going to happen. I don't give a fuck. Fuck them. I was like, look, you know, I had to hear they couldn't leave. And I was like, yeah, so he's got all these dignitaries going to Mar-a-Lago, but he went up on the membership from 100,000 to 200,000, which means you got to pay that just to be on the property. Like, and I don't think they understood the nuance of finance. Like, even if those people are not paying that, he can write that shit off, just make it up. You know, just make up a receipt. Just make it up. Like, yeah, well, they were here. They had to pay. And that's automatic tax write-off for him, which he needed.
Oh, by the way, I got to interrupt because I conjured you earlier. Because you're gonna be my consultant. I got to work up a decent Philly accent after, because I got nothing. The only thing I know that I have to say to be for a Philly accent, I got to say wooder.
Yep.
Wooder.
That's the number one, water. Right. Wooder. Not water.
No.
Wooder.
Wooder.
Wooder. Now, yeah. Right. Okay.
Now, and see, that's yeah. Like, you know, when you go, if you're in the state of Pennsylvania and you've got laundry to do, you can take some wooder from Philadelphia and go to Pittsburgh and do your wash.
Well, see, that's the Midwest. Pittsburgh's the Midwest. You know, I mean, it's not, but it is. Yeah. But, yeah. And South Philly is like, South Philly is like, somebody says, fuck out of here. That's like, you know, what are you talking about? Fuck out of here means, you know, what are you talking about? Now, black folks in West Philly, they have a different way of saying things. In North Philly, black people will be like, what is you doing? I mean, they'll say it slowly, too. Like, what is you doing? You know, just correct things. But, you know, there's a few different accents. But, yeah, the southeastern Pennsylvania, Philadelphia accent, northern Maryland, going down maybe to Waldorf, Maryland, Anne Arundel County is very similar. I've always been in the accent. It's just really.
Oh, I do too, and I'm just playing. But it occurred to me that when I was reading that story at the beginning of the program that for the years that I spent with a bunch of suburban Philadelphia types and Jersey guys, it really didn't rub off.
No, you were right. I heard what you said, but they dropped the F. F, I mean, you could fit the F word in anywhere. Like, well, you know me. When I'm on my thing, yeah. You know, it comes very easily. It comes very easily.
It's a handy little word.
It lends itself to a lot, doesn't it?
Every single part of speech that word can be made to work in. Yes.
Okay, so since here I go with my segue. So since you brought up Mika and Joe, and you know how I feel about that, I started watching a little bit again because I really had to stop when they just went like 180, because they were part of the reason that the guy was elected. They were giving him so much free press in the morning, where it was disgusting. And then and they didn't want to be bothered with him or whatever. And then it came out, Joe was giving him free advice. You know, it was just a lot going on. But this guy, I don't understand why his followers, I don't care what you look like. And I like what you said about race. And I had to be honest with you. Like, one of my family members, a professor, taught a course on racism, which I used to attend a lot of times. And there would be, I mean, this was way back. This was like in the late 70s. Well, she taught it for a while, actually. So, but it started in the late 70s. And there would be people, like, outside the classroom, packed up, because that was when that was cutting edge. Like, people really didn't understand, like, what we were talking about. There was a difference between race and ethnicity. And you know, it's, you know, it's like pulling teeth. People just don't get it. You have to really, really explain what that means. But it means a lot. You know,
well,
but,
look, I mean, I don't. I read once, and you know, this is based on genetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the African continent has, oh God, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 different distinct ethnicities. But you know, tell that to white America. Nuh-uh. They're all black.
Well, no, Africa's a country.
Well, yeah, Africa. Oh, damn right. It's a country. It's a country. Yep.
Right.
Well, you know, capital of Africa is Africa. Capital of Africa is Africa City. Africopolis.
And it's so interesting because when you, I mean, my God, you just look at it on the globe. It's huge. And then you look at, let's say, you know, like people from Ethiopia, they're totally different than folks in South Africa or the West Coast or East Coast or, you know, Libya. I mean, you know. But then again, this is where we are. We're back to the ignorance stage. You know, we're in a dark age. These people have drug us to the dark age. Not us, but a lot of folks are in dark ages in America right now. Because you don't need that book learning. You don't, you know.
I don't need none of that book sense. I got common sense.
Well, it's a fucking shame.
Because I grew up on that. Well, you know, he may have book sense, but he ain't got no common sense. He don't know how to put 350 heads on a 305 engine.
I can imagine. You know what? Now I can imagine. Man, I live here. It's not even about ethnicity. Because in the South, you know, the rates of college-educated people is a lot lower. Because, you know, traditionally only planter class is sent to kids.
Whoa, I mean, the college education rate throughout the country is not exactly stellar. Stellar! Sorry. You know, I was just over on the Brando set. You know what they got over there, Todd? Like, Motivation. They're just swimming in it.
That was beautiful. So, like, when you would come home or whatever from school, I know, because I know that happened to me. We're like, oh, you know, you got to deal with that shit. Like, oh, you think you're better than me? I'm like, no, I really don't. That's your fucking problem. Don't make your problem my problem. How about that? That's what I used to say.
I can hear a little fourth grade Todd. Don't make your problem my problem.
I was a nerd. Oh my God, I was. Listen, I had a spectrum.
Were you Philly's answer to Urkel?
Not quite, but let me tell you who was my childhood friend, John McCorder. He was my childhood friend. You know, the linguist?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my childhood friend, man. I mean, seriously. We like, and Freeline, you know, his brother and I were good friends. The guy who was the architect for the African American Museum. So I was in a little circle. You know, we had a little circle. John loves dinosaurs. I'm not going to say anything disparaging about John, but we kind of went our own old track, you know. But we went to the same schools for a long time, actually. So that was my, you know, but then when I moved to the suburbs, it was different. But that's not all about me. But I'm just saying, like the friends I would meet in the South because I would come down here, you know. I'm like, you know, it's like.
I've been, you know what, Todd, not to be just one non sequitur after another, I've been sober too long. My brain is making too many connections. It's just because, you know,
are you firing me? Is this serotonin out of fucking control?
It's bad, dude. It is bad. You just said design, and my nasty little DJ brain just played a little clip from Donald Fagen's New Frontier where he says, when I finally make up my mind to learn design and study overseas, do you have a steady boyfriend?
Meet Donald Fagen from Steely Dan?
Yeah, from his solo album, The Nightfly, from New Frontier.
Okay. Yeah, I love Steely.
She's wearing Ambush and a French twist. God, I wonder how many members of the Horn Family Community Congregation remember the smell of Ambush.
Oh my God!
Ambush by Dana. It's not even made anymore.
Remember that? You know what? That was the pre-X.
No, Canoe. No, Ambush was women's.
Oh, Canoe.
Okay. Was Ambush repackaged for guys.
That's what it was. That was that.
They're
it
basically
like
the smell. Same scent.
People, the '80s were fun, you know, Tears for Fears, man, all that kind of shit, you know, it was good. And then Canoe. Yeah.
What year did it? Because The Nightfly is just it's a song cycle that's sort of a reverie of growing up in the 50s, a 1982 album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they were older than us, right? They were in the probably 30s. We were young kids. They were there. Yeah, because they're oldest. They're like in their early 80s almost now, I guess, if they're still alive.
Donald Fagen, let me see here. Born January 10th, 1948. So 52, 62, 69 years old.
Okay.
That was some ciphering on the fly.
That was pretty good, man. I've got the same handicap. I'm more on the word side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Steely Dan, my God. If you don't like, if people don't like, you can't judge people, but damn, if you don't like Steely Dan, you don't like music.
Agnes can't stand Steely Dan.
Okay, we won't talk another word of it. I won't say. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, that's what you get for making blanket. That's what I get for making blanket statements. Well, you know. So Jay-Z's new album is a big hit, but that's not here or there.
But, no, but if I understood a tweet I saw from Sandra correctly, it's got some real humdingers on it.
Oh, it does.
Some real toe tappers.
They're saying this is going to be one of his best albums. And both of them, you know, the couple, they have really good videos. Their videos are pretty artistic. And, you know, it's funny because when we grew up, like, videos were just, that was just coming into an art form. You know, the MTV and the videos. And I don't know about you, but it took me a while to get used to watching music with the video. It was just strange. It was weird. I remember Devo. That was a big one because they were on MTV. And I don't know. I'm off on these tangents now, but
speaking of tangents, and seeing how tomorrow is the 4th of July, and in large part Thomas Jefferson writ the Declaration of Independence.
What? He writ it.
ran across a news story today because I'm always a sucker for. A good archaeology story. Archaeologists have been doing some excavating next to the big house there at Monticello. They have found the slave quarters where Sally Hemings lived.
No way.
Built right next door to Jefferson's bedroom.
That close?
According to the NBC News story, Hemings' living quarters was adjacent. Hemings' living quarters were adjacent to Jefferson's bedroom, but she remains something of an enigma. There are only four known descriptions of her. Enslaved blacksmith Isaac Granger Jefferson recalled that Hemings was, quote, mighty near white, very handsome, long straight hair down her back, which is not surprising seeing as how she was the half-sister of the white woman that Jefferson married in the first place, because Jefferson's
right.
father-in-law had a thing for going down to the quarters and, you know, doing what old Marse was prone to do all over the South, you know, raping the daylights out of the slave women.
Well, they sent her to Philadelphia to get educated because the wives didn't want her around and looking too light and too bright and, you know, damn near white. And you've seen those silhouettes. She was probably really good looking. You've seen those, like, I forget what they're called, like
her half sister Martha was said to be quite the beauty. Stands to reason she would have been. But get this. It's a fascinating story, Todd. They had known the building was there all along. And in 1941, it was converted into a men's restroom. The room where she lived and probably birthed no small number of Jefferson's children was 14 feet 8 inches wide by 13 feet long. Not much bigger than this little studio from which I broadcast. And may have actually given birth to 7 of Thomas Jefferson's children.
Wow, that's a lot of pain.
Well, beyond that, this is a striking portrait of the reality of a slave society. She really couldn't say, no, Marse Tom, not tonight. Or, don't you think I've given you enough youngins, Marse Tom?
Seven. No, that's not going to happen.
And see, here's the irony. He could not produce a male heir by his white wife. But there are direct line descendants of Thomas Jefferson who were, you know, from males that he sired by Sally Hemings.
Yeah, I remember when it came out some years ago, not that, like less than 10 years ago. Yep. And they had the DNA test done when Skip came out with his big show, you know, with the DNA testing.
Yeah.
You know, and I forget the name of it. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
And I would say that Independence Day is a particularly poignant and appropriate time to discuss this.
And to remind people of this. And see, this is why a lot of black folks, and it is, and this, I've had this discussion with my girlfriend, fiance, other friends, because a lot of people I deal with are very socially conscious. And, you know, I'm in a circle where I don't give a fuck what you look like. I hang out with people. If you're an asshole, you're an asshole. If you're a dick, you're a dick. I don't give a fuck what you look like. You know, I give everybody a chance. I don't give a fuck. But what I'm saying is that a lot of black folks like to celebrate Juneteenth.
Right.
Because know, we were still slaves. And Cinco de Mayo is actually tied in with black folks. That was the Mexicans, like, on our side, on black folks' side. Like, fuck the Civil War. No, fuck slavery.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the San Patricio Brigade from the Mexican War. But it's also but it's also you know, it's commemorated on Cinco de Mayo, and the Mexican War. You know, up until we started the Iraq War, Bush War II, was probably the filthiest, most immoral, most unethical, most egregiously disgusting war the United States ever waged.
I couldn't have said it better. That's just a made up bullshit. It was just made up. It was made up. Well, we had to
right.
Kill
and see again that it's the night before the Independence Day, so we can talk about this too. What happened in the Mexican War? The seeds of that were actually planted before the end of the 18th century, Todd. Now, Thomas Jefferson hated Aaron Burr with a white, and I do mean white, hot passion. Because Burr very nearly got in the way of Jefferson's monumental ambitions that he tried really, really hard to keep hidden. And so after the Hamilton affair, and we to this day, it's one of those mysteries of American history, we still don't know what it was that Alexander Hamilton said that made Aaron Burr call him out. They had worked.
They hated each other.
Well, it didn't start that way. They were young, they were junior officers together in Washington's army. When the revolution was over and the Constitution was ratified, they both established successful law practices in New York City. And in fact, they were co-counsel on the same side of lawsuits. They worked amiably together. But they were both politically inclined, and Burr actually showed more talent for it than Hamilton. Hamilton, meanwhile, and this is the shame of what Lin-Manuel Miranda did with the Hamilton story. It's a great play. But he played fast and loose with some facts. Because, among other things, Hamilton was a very dirty, dirty, dirty boy. Because, I mean, he had a wife and a gajillion kids and still went out a-romping.
Yeah, he was spreading the seed.
With a woman who wound up black via her skeevy-ass husband blackmailing Hamilton.
By the way, that word skeevy is underrated.
I love that word. It just sounds like what it is.
It sounds like what it is. It tells the truth. All
right. So, anyway, by the time... Burr becomes vice president under that original constitutional idea that the guy who came in second would be vice president. After a contested ballot that had to be thrown into the House of Representatives, we only had three presidential elections before the fourth one had to be thrown into the House of Representatives. That's how long the original constitutional scheme lasted. You know, the idea that we're all just going to go out and vote for the president, and yeah, I mean, we'll never have to use that whole. We'll never have to throw it to the House. I mean, my God. Well, Jefferson's election was thrown into the House of Representatives. Burr becomes vice president.
Wait a minute. That was in like the 1780 something, 1790?
No, that's 1800.
1800, okay.
And from that point forward...
It didn't take long, did it?
From that point forward... No, no time at all. From that point forward, Jefferson despises Burr. Remember, there's actually a point to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, like I said, we don't know what got said, but it got said in Albany. And dueling had been made illegal in New York. It could still be done kind of on the margin and on the down low in New Jersey. But the thing is, you had to say something pretty awful, one, to get called out. And then your seconds negotiated with each other, and a bunch of the times, an apology would be tendered, and it would all be forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever Hamilton said was nasty enough to get him called out. And then he would not apologize for saying it. So he's the one who pushed it into the active duel situation. Burr shoots him. Burr kills him. Burr has to take it on the lam because he's a wanted man. And he runs around. He winds up, you know, he goes and he was a ladies' man. He was a ladies' man, too. His wife was considerably older than him and sickly. She gave him one child, a daughter, Theodosia. And so he went and shacked around a little bit in Philly. But he gets it in his head because this was something that had been bouncing around for eons. This stuff's all backed up in the historical record. This would make a fantastic... I mean, okay, so Hamilton was big on Broadway. This would make a fantastic HBO or Starz or Cinemax or whatever miniseries. Yeah. So he gets it in his head, you know, screw this. If I stick around long enough, Thomas Jefferson's going to have my head in a noose. Burr was a smart man. To this day, the youngest man ever to graduate from Princeton University.
Wow.
And so he...
What a story. This is a great story.
He hits the road and starts working his way west. Pittsburgh, etc. Hooks up with some people who know the West. And back then, the West is like Western Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And he's got this plan that he's going to go down to the Ouachita Riverlands in what is present-day Louisiana, Texas, Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
which were then, at the time, Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Out of control. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he stops about 2 hours from here at a place called... It's an island in the Ohio River.
With the Indian name?
No. Oh, damn it! It's part of West Virginia now, but living there was an Irishman living quite wealthily in his mansion. Who had fled Ireland with his young bride because she happened to be, oh, like his stepdaughter or his niece, you know, something kind of not looked well upon.
Skeevy.
And there they lay out this plot where they're going to go on down the river. Along the way, though, he was pitching it to people in Kentucky. Andrew Jackson signed on because Andrew Jackson was land-crazed and land-hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't managed to figure out a way to get title to most of south-central Tennessee and what would become North Alabama yet.
Mm-hmm.
Blennerhassett Island. Harmon Blennerhassett was the Irishman. And so they continue on, and they continue on down the river. And he's also, Burr at the same time, is working with the highest ranking general in the United States military, a guy named James Wilkinson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Burr didn't know was that James Wilkinson was actively engaged in treason against his own country. Wilkinson was a Revolutionary War veteran.
Yep.
But he had gotten...
he was a Tory. He was a Tory.
Mm-hmm. No, no, he was on the colonist side. And had become the highest-ranking general in the young American army. And was posted as head of all forces in New Orleans and in that region. And so Burr began negotiating with him about the Ouachita River lands.
What?
Jefferson,
that's around the time of the French and Indian War, isn't it?
No. We're at like 1803.
1803. Okay.
Wilkinson, Jefferson, meanwhile, is trying to figure out anything he can do to fuck over Aaron Burr. And Jefferson was a vindictive, petty, spiteful, mean-spirited man when he wanted to be. And so Wilkinson, who is engaged in treason, turns on Burr and gives this, and turns over an edited version of this cipher letter, because Burr was such a genius, he wrote everything in ciphers of his own devising. His, you know, he had a head for numbers and codes and things like that. So,
okay.
And you couldn't read it unless you had the key. So Wilkinson has the key. He turns it around, edits it to suit his own goals, to cover his own treasonous ass, and drops the dime on Burr.
This is a great story.
Who then gets hunted down on an absolutely constitutionally questionable APB, all points bulletin kind of thing, and is eventually brought to ground in South Alabama, trying to pass himself off in disguise till he can get on a ship and get out of the country before Jefferson gets his neck in that noose. But it was too late.
What?
So Jefferson has him dragged back to Washington.
Damn, that took a long time.
And put on trial for treason. At the same time, people are telling Jefferson, by the way, you know Wilkinson's committing treason, right? Well, I don't care. If it helps get Burr hanged, I don't give a shit. I mean, we talk about the petty vindictiveness of, say, the hunting of the cleanest in the 1990s. It's got nothing on the pettiness of Tom Jefferson's pursuit of Aaron Burr.
Well, that's exactly what crossed my mind, because imagine that's when, I mean, come on, that's way back. You got there's no electronic anything. There's no official ID. I mean, how can you not? You got to be a dumbass not to be a disappear. Unless you want to be around populated areas. You know what I mean? Come on. How the fuck? Just fucking shave your head.
So it gets better. He is accused of committing treason against the United States by seeking to go to Spanish lands and mount a revolution and make himself king of Mexico.
Oh, they made up that shit. Okay.
Because the thing is, the Western expansion of what had become the United States, part of the revolution gets started because the King of England says, hey, don't y'all go past the Alleghenies and the Appalachian Mountains. Don't do it.
Because he didn't want to have any part of that. He didn't want to get into
because his majestic, royal, noble, high graciousness, serene George III, in his saner moments, had entered into agreements with the indigenous people saying, you know, it's your land. We're not going to screw with you.
Mm-hmm.
And the Americans said, oh, no, fuck that. We're stealing that land, too. We started off stealing land. Why should we stop?
Why stop now? Or exactly.
Right.
They're fucking Indians. Right.
And so the westward, and the whole time, especially in the southern slave states, the aristocrats and the planters and the slave owners are thinking, man, there is a lot of potential slaves in Mexico. Hell, the Spanish have already turned them into slaves for us.
Mm-hmm.
This is easy. And Jefferson and Jefferson knows all this, so he gets him tried for treason, but John Marshall, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, winds up trying the case. And John Marshall and Thomas Jefferson hated each other's guts, and they were cousins.
He couldn't wait to rule.
Because all them damn Virginians were cousins. You know, I mentioned earlier, you're my sister, you're my sister, you're my sister. All them damn aristocrat Virginians were cousins.
Well, plain of class.
And so here's Jefferson, who's all shy and retiring and intellectual and wants to be thought of as this high-minded philosopher. And you know, shuffles around the White House in a bathrobe and bedroom slippers like Donald fucking Trump. And on the other hand, you've got John Marshall, who's urbane and witty and has a mind like a steel trap and has memorized more law and has forgotten more law than most people will ever know. Brilliant, deductive, just an incisive, right? You know, the guy who gives us Marbury versus Madison.
Which
sets the framework for the entirety of American constitutional law, which, incidentally, people like Mike Huckabee and Mike Pence and the rest of those goddamn weirdos want to get rid of.
Because that sets the Federalists against the other side.
No, really, because it sets up the Supreme Court as being able to tell the rest of the government to fuck off. Your nasty little law is unconstitutional and got to go. And so consequently, they would the Republicans would like to strip that power from the Supreme Court so that anything the Congress says goes, whether it's constitutional or not, because they say it's constitutional. Hereby find that Jesus lives inside the hoo-hoos of every woman in America. And therefore therefore they cannot have no abortions, because every abortion is aborting a little bit of Jeebus. And the Supreme Court would go, oh, fuck off. That's unconstitutional. But on the other hand, the Congress wants to be able to go, yeah, fuck you. You got no say in this. But anyway, so that's John Marshall. And John Marshall takes one look at what Jefferson is trying to do to Aaron Burr and says, fuck off. And Burr survives. And he outlived Hamilton, he outlives Jefferson, he outlives Adams, and damn near starves to death in Europe, but eventually comes back and sets up and runs a successful law practice all the way up into the late 1830s. He sees the rise of Andrew Jackson, and he knows, and Jackson, when that shit hit the fan, Andrew Jackson ran like the little chicken shit he basically was. Oh, no, I've never heard of the guy. When he was all in. He was all in. And so all
then
of the...
Then he didn't know him. Then he didn't know him, right?
Right, yeah. So, you know, to kind of put a bow on this and bring it full circle, all of the whole business of American expansionism...
Mm-hmm.
Is founded in the same slavery that Thomas Jefferson practiced the whole time he was saying that all men are created equal. So there's more than a little bit of rank hypocrisy in this deeply inspirational propaganda document that we celebrate tomorrow, known as the Declaration of Independence, Todd. And I hope this doesn't come across as me trying to lecture at you. I'm not. I'm just telling a story.
I've been in so many lectures, and I've forgotten more than I've learned. But what I'm saying is that this will be a great miniseries. It's a wonderful you can't beat history. Because, you know, we're going to look back on this era right now in American history and be like, what the fuck were those people thinking about?
Well, and see, it continues forward. It gets manifested in the Mexican War. We still want to control. And we went all the way to Mexico City. Mm-hmm. And we were prepared to, you know, do our damnedest to control the place, and then got pulled back. But when the Civil War went down, there were active, and you can verify it historically, there are primary source documents that do this, there were active plans on the part of the Confederacy to expand southward, to try to conquer Mexico, try, you know, if they could just win, you know, if they could just, you know,
right,
win the war that they started, to try to conquer Mexico, conquer Cuba, and eventually go on down to Brazil and conquer Brazil.
That's what I was about to say. Like, a lot of folks don't know, you know, there's a whole colony and it's still there in Brazil.
Yeah, Flavio, who was born in Brazil, has told us about that on there. And there are still a few people of American Southern descent who live in that little corner, that little cranny of Brazil. Mm-hmm. But all,
and,
you know,
that culture.
And so by the time you get Teddy Roosevelt at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, the colonialism that takes its form in the Spanish-American War, which is in Cuba and in the Philippines. Isn't it interesting that it's Filipinos and Cubans who take it in the shorts in the Spanish-American War? You know, it's not like we went over and invaded Spain, for fuck's sake.
Right.
But all of this has its roots in the pernicious doctrine that those geniuses who gave us the Declaration of Independence could not, would not deal with. Because, see, when it came time for the colonies' delegates to the Continental Congress to vote on the Declaration of Independence, if there'd been a goddamn word in there about ending slavery, you lose Virginia, you lose North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia.
See, all this shit is connected. Exactly. And that's where we get the Electoral College, which is messing us up now.
Yeah, but that's 1787. That's a good 11 years in the future.
Well, okay. That's true. Exactly. That's true.
But if they could not have all 13 colonies sign off on the Declaration, there was no point in publishing it.
Well, they knew it was fragile to begin with. I mean, the whole thing was rickety. Just like Benjamin Franklin said, you know, you got your republic if you can keep it.
So, you know, so slavery is actually the root cause of everything that has ever been bad for this country.
Well, like you said, put a bow on it and try to bring it full circle. That is why a lot of Black Americans are conflicted on this holiday, the 4th of July, because it's like, yeah, it's freedom, but why do we have to keep? People are getting weary. Because it's like, okay, you got black history, fine, black history, whatever. But really, it's American history. It's like we are American. We've always been Americans. We've always fought for this country. You know, and it's so much more to talk about when you fast forward. And I'll be honest with you, like, I was enthralled. And I think what got me interested in history was when I learned about the concept of, as a young man, manifest destiny. Because that really shaped this white supremacist bullshit. Because a lot of people got free shit. And then they want to talk about other people trying to get what they think is free stuff. Whereas some people actually did get free shit and got a foothold and a step up. And it wasn't your people. It wasn't the Scott Irish up in Appalachia. It was those Norwegians and other folks from ethnic folks from Europe who they wanted to teach how to farm in the Midwest. Like, here, take it. Free land. Go for it.
Yeah, nobody here.
We already killed the Indians. Fuck them. And if I'm wrong, tell me.
No. And so, just to bring it all the way back home to Tom Jefferson. Dig it. Sally Hemings' bedroom. The article states that she probably lived a little higher up on the food chain than the rest of the enslaved population that made Monticello go. It wasn't white folks made that place go. And it's, I mean, anybody who's ever been there knows it is beautiful. It is fabulous. It is magnificent, exquisite. It sits on that hilltop in the Blue Ridge, and to look out at, and he had tens of thousands of acres. He eventually sold them off because he couldn't make any money. The only thing he ever made money on was the nailery that his slaves ran and made nails and sold them at a profit. But there were 5,000 acres. There's 5,000 acres there now. And there were 5,000 acres under cultivation. And there wasn't any white folks doing that. Tom Jefferson, you know, he may have had his little experimental garden, but he probably didn't even weed his own garden. He had a slave to do that. And Sally Hemings lived in a little cottage, little cabin, built right smack next door dab to Tom Jefferson's bedroom. And her cabin, her cabin, Todd, had no windows.
He didn't want anybody looking to her. That was his concubine. I mean, come on.
And she had no window to cry for help from. When he was forcing himself upon her. And that. That, Todd, is the author, the man who tomorrow will be celebrated from sea to shining sea as the definer and the author of our liberties. That's the man who said the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is their natural manure. But that didn't apply to the tyrant that he was to hundreds of slaves on his plantation. He only wrote that in a letter to people in New England after there was an uprising up there, and it had potential to turn violent, and it was because free smallholders had about all they could stand and were ready to go after the power elite of New England, of which John Adams was a member. And John Adams was appalled when he saw what Thomas Jefferson had written, because Thomas Jefferson was basically saying, hey, if you need to go and slit John Adams' throat and drain him out just to keep him honest, that's fine. But by God, let one person of color say a word about wanting to be free, and the hangman would come out and the nooses would swing.
See, Bob,
Nat Turner comes to mind.
And Charles, let me tell you something. I like what you said to Charlie earlier from Tennessee. And you know what I'm about to say. But yeah. But you see, this is the problem. People need to, this is why education is important. Because, I mean, people can talk all the shit they want. Like when I was in school, you say, oh, go back to Africa. That kind of bullshit. But a lot of us, black people, we were here before.
Yeah, it's like telling me to go back to Scotland. I ain't never been there in the first place. You ever been to you ever been to that country of Africa, Todd?
That country of Africa. It's So, you know, we have a lot of potential. Okay? But we have a lot of work to do as a country. And the good work can start with getting rid of a mentally ill leader, if you even want to use that term. Because this is absolutely out of fucking control now.
Well, I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio, okay? So let me make a suggestion here as we roll toward the end of the program. I have suggested in the past that Donald Trump is mentally ill. I've suggested, for God's sakes, that he is actually had his brain hollowed out by spirochetes from syphilis.
Yeah, tertiary syphilis.
Okay,
yeah.
But none of us are, there are a couple of us maybe in the Horn family community congregation. I think of Lauren in Canada, and I think of Dr. Allen, who are actual, you know, diagnosticians, trained medical personnel. But we're not really qualified to, I mean, we can say as laymen, he's knucking futs. But what the terms we need to learn to speak in and go forward speaking in and memorize is that the President of the United States is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office.
25th Amendment talk.
Yeah. The President of the United States is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. That way we're not saying he's nuts. We're not saying he's sick. We're not saying he's in a coma. We're not saying the spirochetes have hollowed out his brain. We are simply saying what the law provides. The President of the United States is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office.
You know what, Bob? I would like if you would say that at the beginning of your next show, because you were on to something, because that's what they do. They're very good at being on message with one.
Let me just flesh this out for a minute. Let me just ask a couple of questions. If you're going to completely revamp the healthcare system in the United States, should you actually understand how that healthcare system works?
Probably.
Trump doesn't. If you're actually going, one of the single most important powers of the presidency is that of conducting foreign policy. Should you actually know how NATO works? Trump doesn't.
He doesn't know his watch works.
Trump doesn't.
No.
Okay? He doesn't know how anything works, and he can't learn, okay? He's been on the job damn near 6 months and has shown no interest whatsoever in learning how the office works. And so if you have no idea, you do not learn and you cannot learn.
You're unfit.
Then you are unable to discharge the powers and duties of your office.
Unable to discharge the power. Right. Mm-hmm. The only thing he can get discharged is that fluid coming out of his penis because he's got all kinds of venereal disease.
Ew. Well, thanks for that. We'll end in the gutter tonight, Todd. Thank you. So, you know, that's kind of how it ends tonight. And I thank you for the call. It's been a magnificent conversation. I hope I haven't bored you. I hope I haven't bored anybody. But I think that's where the conversation needs to go, Todd. Because that's what if you want to remove this guy from office under the 25th Amendment, you are going to have to prove that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office.
Have you been listening to Keith Olbermann, those little things he does on YouTube?
Oh, I watch him every now and then, yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious. Yeah. So
I saw that he tweeted 25th Amendment now and got that hashtag going. I don't know if he's saying the same thing as I. He's usually much more eloquent than I, but I think this is at least a jumping off place.
It's a little different, but that, you know, we need, all I'm saying is that like the right wing has been doing for the past, like, 20 years probably, they are always unified in what their message. They have a message a week, and everybody says the same thing. And we've been unable to do that for some silly reason. And this is where we really need to be unified, in just what you said. Because he is unfit. It's not even, like you said, I've been saying, it's not about politics. He's just unfit. It's not personal. It's just like, look, man, you are unfit. Go away. Sorry.
Unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Well, Todd, we got to get out of here. In fact, we're past time for getting out of here. But I've enjoyed it. Listen, I hope something awesome's going on the grill tomorrow, man.
You know what's up.
I know what's up.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. You can report. You can report back tomorrow.
Okay.
Later, Todd.
Bye.
Bye now. And so we get out of here. Thank you very kindly to Laborman and Ralphs. And thank you to Stephen. Thank you very kindly to everyone who helped us meet the first fundraising goal of what's going to be a rather intense week. Thank you. Back tomorrow for the live. Like I said, tell the friends and neighbors. Spread it on Twitter. Spread it on Facebook. This program will be live 4th of July night. I look forward to it. I hope you do too. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.